Well, welcome back to the church planting class, and we have a real privilege today to have Mr. Rich DeVos. Rich co-founded Amway in 1959. He also is owner of the Orlando Magic. He has started businesses. He's an entrepreneur. I'm in his office with him today, and I look around, I see awards, Entrepreneur of the Year, 1997. He is someone who can talk to us about how to start things, how to do new businesses. Rich, welcome to the class. You're going to be with us for the next several presentations. So I'm excited, and I'm so glad that you're with me today.
Henry, well, we've got a long track record on all this stuff, Henry, so I want to congratulate you on how far you've come on this. It's all new, and it's creative, and it's terrific.
Well, in 1990, we actually started our relationship. We've been together almost 20 years. You've been mentoring me since 1994, and I will tell you that your input into my life, five churches, all that, have been directly related to your help. So I thank you. As much as you appreciate me, I appreciate you.
You know what? I didn't do any of it. I encourage you, but I didn't do any of it. You did it. Just like these students. It's not going to be us. It's going to be them.
It is. That's cool. It says in Romans 15, verse 20, the Apostle Paul says, it's always been my ambition to preach Christ where he was not known, so I would not be building on someone else's foundation. Paul was a church planter. He wanted, you know, if there's already a church planted, he would say, I'm moving on to plant another church. A church is starting something new, and you understand that. Why have you liked starting new things? What has motivated you over the years?
I suspect when we are young and we are starting a career, we were dedicated to starting a business of our own. We come from business families, my partner and I, Javen Andel. And so to us, it was all about starting a business of our own. We wanted to own our own business. And it's sort of what Romans talks about, that when you start it, it's yours, you have helped create it. And then you can go on and start another church or start another business or just stick with the one you got as you wish. But the idea was to do something new that we personally could, I guess, take credit for. We wanted to say we did this.
In your book, Compassionate Capitalism, you explain the difference between a social entrepreneur and a compassionate capitalism, compassionate capitalist. And part of church planting, you know, it's about raising monetary resources, it's about raising money, it's about understanding different roles. Can you talk a little bit about that? I remember early in our mentorship you had written that book, and I was so impressed by how you talked about that.
I'm trying to remember what you define, what I define in my book as a social entrepreneur. Go ahead.
Well, what you talked about back then, again, you can kind of, you said, I'm a compassionate capitalist. The Lord, you know, I create business. But you pastors and church planters and leaders out there in the nonprofit world, so to speak,
okay,
you know, you're out there and you've got to do something too.
Well, that might be religious. It's not certainly more than social.
Oh, yeah.
I think of social entrepreneurs as book clubs and people who start things of that type that aren't as serious as building a church,
mm-hmm,
or presenting the gospel. But being a compassionate capitalist, you know, talks about the concept of when you do well or succeed at something, it's the sharing of it. It's not only the earning of it, but you must learn to give it.
That's right.
So it's passing it on. If you don't pass it on, then you haven't completed the cycle.
Right.
So you start something, you bring somebody to know Christ, but then you got to help them learn how to bring somebody to Christ.
Right.
See, that's. But the compassionate side is you also have got to be concerned with the spiritual well-being of that person. You've got to be concerned about their success. But when I wrote it, it was with Russia in mind.
Oh.
And with the concept that as this left communism, they would adopt capitalism and make it a dog-eat-dog type capitalism where all we got to do is make money.
Okay.
But the only completion of making money is in sharing your know-how and your goodwill and your funds to help others achieve and to eat or help them. You've got to have a personal caring attitude if you're going to really be a successful capitalist, in my opinion.
And part of that social entrepreneur, as you defined it, I remember back then as you said, you know, there will be those who will go out and meet the needs of mercy. There will be those who will plant churches. There will be pastors. And together, the social entrepreneurs and the compassionate capitalists come together and partner to make a great culture.
Yeah, but they're all entrepreneurs. You know?
Yes.
You know, if you're a Christian, you should be a giver.
Yes.
And you have a concern for the poor and the hungry and the needy and the prisoners and all that. But just making money is not enough.
That is so cool.
That does not complete your life. And so when you think of people starting churches, you know, we're adapting a business model to a church almost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're trying to say building a church is an entrepreneurial activity in a whole different realm, really.
Well, a lot of church pastors, they don't think of themselves that way. They go to seminary, they learn how to preach a sermon. And this church planter entrepreneur side is something that many times they don't think about.
Well, but you see, if a church doesn't bring in new people, it will die.
Yes.
So if you haven't, you have to be an entrepreneur if you're going to be a successful pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be always witnessing and bringing new people in.
Wow.
Every church has dropouts. Every church has people who fade away. In our business, we have great numbers of people who come and go. And you have people come and go in your church, and then they don't come back.
Right.
So, or you have people who are members and go off to another church, yep, or just drop out of the church entirely. If you don't replace them, then your church just withers away and dies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are stages that a church goes through, but
yeah,
you may want to talk about it at a later time.
We're going to get to that, because that made a big impact in my life a little earlier. You know, in a church, in church planting, you minister with people. And in 2 Corinthians, Paul talks about that. When we came into Macedonia, this body of ours had no rest, but we were harassed in every turn, conflicts on the outside and the fears within. And a lot of church planters, and I've been with church planters, training them at CLI, I find that people scare them, or there's walls that they have. And I read your excellent book, 10 Powerful Phrases for Positive People. Can you highlight some of those phrases? You don't have to do all 10, but maybe a few that hit in your mind as regard to overcoming some of that resistance and that working with people.
Well, you know, Henry, if you go back to the 2 Corinthians reference, it says we were harassed at every turn, conflicts on the outside, fears within. So, you know, we act like we can do these things and not have those things.
Right. Yeah.
We are going to have conflicts.
Yes.
We're going to have people laugh at us. There's going to be people who turn us down, who tell us we're crazy. There's going to be a fear within ourselves that we'll get somebody to take a swing at us,
right,
because they resent what we're talking about, or they don't want to hear what we're talking about. In our case, government agencies would say, you're not doing it right, you're illegal, you're this. And so you have to put up with even governmental interference.
And that may be a case for many pastors in the future.
Wherever they are, they may have governments that resent them. The governments want loyalty to the government. They resent the church.
Yep.
The church becomes an intrusion in who they trust and who they believe in. And so you will have resistance. But you have resistance on the part of the person, resistance on the part of their family. When we started our business, we said we will never present to an individual without talking to the spouse.
Interesting.
Having them together, because you get one of them say, yes, I believe, I want to go to your church. But then the husband or wife say, I don't want to do that, I'm opposed to that. So always try and engage both of them when you start that conversation. That gets rid of one of the harassments.
Right. I remember you mentored me in that years and years and years ago. And what I used to do early in my ministry is I would talk to the one. And I always found that it was problems. And then after you had mentored me, this was in the mid-90s, from that point on, I had them into my house for hospitality, and I wouldn't even do my whole discussion of the church,
yeah,
until we had them into our house when they were both there. And I will tell you, that was a big game changer.
Well, that's all about leadership and management and witnessing. You can't get a message through unless you have a relationship with a person.
Yes.
You have to, you know, we always say there are two steps to making a sale. The first step is getting them to agree to listen to the presentation. The second step is the presentation. of the gospel, the good news, the bad news.
Right.
But don't try to conflict the two.
Right.
Make sure you clearly define getting them to take time. Say, can I come over tonight and talk to you? Your husband will be there. We'd like to talk to you both.
Right.
Just work on that. Say, well, what do you want to talk to me about? I want to talk to you about life-changing materials. I want to talk to you about something very important to you. But I'm not going to hit you up for any money. I'm not going to try to make a sale. But I do want to present something to you that will impact your life for good. Now, but, you know, that doesn't make any difference. If you don't want to see me, you know, that's the first thing. Are you willing to sit down and listen to something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So first, get the appointment. Get them to take time to listen. Then, present.
It's interesting. Very cool. In your book, 10 Powerful Phrases, that book to me is like the textbook on how to treat people. Yesterday, Jerry and I had a day where we could just kind of walk on the beach, and I was thinking about your book, and I was talking to people, and just some of those things like respect and talking with them and listening to what, and so many people gave me their cards, and I mean, guy from New Orleans invited me to New Orleans, he was at the Saints game, you know?
Yeah.
So he invited me down there. I want to show you New Orleans, the Bourbon Street area,
How did you start talking to him?
He and his wife were on the beach and they were having their camera in the air and they were taking a picture. Uh-huh. And I just walked up to him and said, "Would you like me to take that picture for you?"
Perfect. That's such a natural thing to do, but most people don't. You know, in our hotels, we actually train our employees to do just that.
Is that right?
If you ever see a couple, and you know, they always say, "Oh, I'll take the picture. You like get in it? Say, just a moment. Let me take the picture for you."
Right. So I did it like 20 times yesterday.
I know, but so that's fun. The opener.
Yeah, and you talk, and
that develops, and then I always found in trying to make a gospel presentation, I have to establish credibility with them.
Yep.
I have to establish a relationship with them, and that's done in my way by asking questions.
Right.
"Well, hi, you come from so. Let me take a picture for you. Where do you guys come from? See? What do you do? Do you have a job? How long have you been in Florida? Why did you come up here?" And you just ask them questions, and they begin to share things with you. And then after you've done that a while, they say, "By the way, are you church members too? Do you have a church you go to? Or
right.
You have a spiritual relationship with God?" And you get into that, and they finally answer it as they do or they don't. So now you have a range of how to talk to them,
yep,
where they are. So you learn about them by listening. Then you say, "Well, let me tell you what I believe."
Yep.
Usually they will say, "Well, what do you believe?"
Right.
So you don't have to start the religious conversation. They do.
Yeah.
Say, "What do you believe?" And right. I say, "Well, I'll tell you what I believe and what I am and why really I'm talking up here today. And I'd like to just sit and talk to you about whenever you have time."
What do you do when you think of someone? I mean, how do you look at them? You know, and I think a lot of church planters struggle with that. Like if they see somebody with a bunch of tattoos, or they see someone who's just, you know, not in their like comfortable people group. You know, I mean, in some way. And I've watched you. I mean, we've been to various Orlando Magic games together, and you're just not the owner of the Magic. I've seen you talk to a bellboy or a gal who's a maid, and you'll ask, and you'll say, "You know, I hear that your mother was sick." You know, that just is not the common thinking. And a lot of church planters don't necessarily think that way either. They think about writing their sermon and putting their program together. But there is something special about that. Why do you do that?
It's two different subjects. You know, one is prioritizing time to go out and meet people.
Okay.
You've got to make it your business, if you're in business, to go out of your church, out of your office, out of your home. You got to get where people are, you can talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you've always got something to do.
Right.
You've always got a funeral you got to prepare for. You always got a baptism you got to do. You always get another sermon to write. You know, always you have things to do at home.
Right.
Your wife's got things for you, too.
Right.
So you have to allocate time and say, "This is the day I go out."
Right.
"And this is the day I go to Rotary Club." Mm-hmm. So that you are in the community, not just sitting in your office.
Wow.
Sitting in your office will kill your church and kill your business.
That is incredible. Wow. You know, if a pastor is not self-aware, a church can naturally fall into problems. And I once heard you talk about, you brought that up a little bit, and I'd love to have you share that. And you told me that years ago, and it's never left me. Could you share the stages, the phases of a church, and what a pastor ought to do not to get his church in a funk?
You know, it's true of churches, homes, families. It's true of schools. It's true of the government. And that is a matter of how do we keep focusing on building the enterprise?
Mm.
In other words, if you have a government, you want it to keep moving forward, okay? Not just sitting here talking about how to swap the same money around. How do we create new wealth for our country so all of our people prosper? But it's not. Some people think there's only a limited amount of wealth, or there's only so many people in this town. They have a percentage who are going to come to church. Well, there's an unlimited number of people in this town, any town, that mm-hmm. will come to church
right.
if they're approached correctly.
Right.
So you've got to, first of all, when you start a church, you build it.
Okay.
That's stage one. Now it's got going, and you got 10, you got 20 people coming to your home or your church or your school, wherever you gather. It really doesn't make any difference. A fancy building doesn't really do it. You know, most little churches start in garages or basements. I've held thousands of meetings in somebody's garage or in their living room to help them start a business that is all over the world. After you got it started, you have to manage it, okay? Now you've got 20 people in your church. Some of them have funerals, some of them have births, some of them have conflict, some of them have children they need to have you talk to a little bit. All these things are going on. Now you've got to raise money to run your church. Now you've got to raise that. You've got to find a new place to meet. You've got to prepare these sermons. You didn't have this before. So now you've got to do all these things that you think are important.
Right.
So, but you do have to tend to them.
Right.
You just got to prioritize it. But if you do that, pretty soon you don't have time to witness. You don't have time to go out and talk to new people. You are so busy running your business or your church that you get stopped right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the extent of your church growth. Now you say, well, I'll get my people to do that. See, then you're always going to motivate your people to do that. That's good. And maybe that works. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll work for a few of them.
Right.
But teaching them to do what you're having a hard time doing, you give some idea of the degree of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
Doable? Yes. I've done it all over. That's how I got my business where it is, by teaching them to duplicate the process. But if you stay there long enough, pretty soon your church will get started stagnate.
Mm-hmm.
Now you'll have the same little group of people coming, and they'll all start to chat to each other, and they'll have a cozy little deal. But that isn't what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You want to build a church,
yep.
not run a church.
Right.
And so if you stay there long enough, you go into what I call a defensive posture. You'll meet somebody else who's building a church and say, well, how's your church going? Oh, so. You know, he said, you know, in my town, I just can't find anybody. He said, the people in my town are so cold. I just can't believe it. He said, they got so many bills to pay and, the economy is bad. And you've got a whole defensive or excuse posture that you've built up to justify why it won't work where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stay there long enough, and I mean, it might be a month, it might be 2 months, depending on how much money you can afford, how long you can afford to keep stalling
right.
before he generates a new revenue,
mm-hmm.
then you go to stage four. The stage four is what I call a blaming stage. And now you blame the people in your church for not bringing new people in. You blame them for not giving more money.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can improve your building. Because if you had a better parking lot, you'd get more people. I'm surely if we had more parking. I've heard people who tell me parking was the whole center of the church. If we only had a better building, and better hymnals, whatever it is, that's your defensive posture. But it's community, it's cost, it's never the fact that you aren't going out there talking to people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole church, a way of building a church, is to build a church.
Right.
It didn't matter where Paul went. You talk about right. Paul. If he had a shipwreck, he did talk about the World Series, or he didn't talk about the last Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Or he didn't even talk about the shipwreck.
Right.
He gets on the beach and he starts preaching, doesn't he?
Right.
He was always preaching.
Yeah.
I had a friend, Anthony Zioli, and when he was converted in a prison, and he talked to another man, and he told him about the gospel, and he became a Christian, accepted Christ. And as he left, the man said to him, "Zioli, witness, witness, witness." Those are the words that stuck in his head. He became known as the Walking Bible. He knew the Bible, memorized from right from back to front. In his prison cell, he put it in front of the keyhole so he'd get a light. When the lights went out, then he'd put it in front of the keyhole so he could read the Bible, and to where he eventually got it all memorized. So he said, "Now, who do I witness to? I'm in prison." Well, he said, "I guess I got to witness to the jailer, the guy who comes and brings me my food, the jailer who watches over this sort of the jail. That's the man." So he started witnessing to him. I was the first guy he could find. Then he could find a few out in the yard when they had breaks. So, but always seeking to witness.
Yep.
And so if you're a church builder, you have to always be seeking to present the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, then what happens to your people? They follow your example.
Yeah, there's buzz created in the whole church.
Yeah, because why? There's new people coming in.
Yep.
And when they see new people coming in, then it becomes easier for them to bring new people in. If they see a church that's dead, then they are comfortable being dead. See, you have a zone of comfort that happens.
Well, with that, let's conclude this first presentation, and we look forward to seeing you next week or next time. And we're having a great privilege to talk to a master business builder, an entrepreneur, an encourager.